You're listening to HowStreet.com Radio, available online at TalkDigitalNetwork.com. Welcome to HowStreet.com Radio, the online source for market opinions. Here is Jim Goddard.
My guest is Rick Ackerman, editor of the newsletter Rick's Picks, his website, RickAckerman.com. You're speaking to us from
South Florida, same as usual. And we usually talk about the weather, but I'm starting to think, Jim, that just in general, weather sucks, and it doesn't matter where you are or what season it is. We always have, you know, killer blizzards in the winter, and we're having these grotesque heat waves that seem to get worse every summer. So Florida is definitely not the place to be.
Now, AI has been sucking up billions and billions of dollars. They're building these giant AI data centers. But what kind of data are we going to be getting, and is that data actually worth any money?
Well, those billions and billions, by the way, that's not even a rounding error compared to what this fabulous idea is sucking up. But we've got all the big players in there literally throwing or raising trillions of dollars to build data centers that will take enormous power and water cooling to work. So the infrastructure alone runs into the many, many trillions of dollars, or tens of trillions, I should think. And we don't really even know what the value of the output is. And you could say for the time being, whatever its value, it's certainly not commanding that value in the marketplace. You know, a lot of the AI think machines, everything from Claude to ChatGPT, OpenAI, Genesis, they're all platforms that nobody's paying for them anything close to what it's really costing to build the data capacity to give me a simple answer to a question like, you know, how long will it take to recover from gallbladder surgery? So we've got consumers asking those kinds of questions, and it's really sort of like buying a $3 million Aston Martin and lugging around the streets in second gear. But on the other hand, when you take some of the bigger users and the companies that think, well, yeah, we're going to need more data, we're going to need this AI, the tokens, the little bits of information that they use, they're not paying for it either, really. They're not paying full price relative to what's being invested in untold infrastructure. But if you I want to come back all the way to the basics, all right, to this idea that of an information age, and we'll go just a little bit earlier than that to a time, let's say in the 1950s and the 1960s, we called information data, and it was presumed that even an IBM mainframe, a 360, whatever it was doing, humming away, was done in service of an economy where real goods and services were transacted. Let's think, to make the example easier, we'll say real goods. So all of the data that the computers were crunching had to do with more efficient ways to sell, to manufacture and distribute real products. So we long since left that idea back in the era of quaintness, and now there's this overweening idea that information itself is the substance of the economy. And I would challenge that. In fact, I would flush it down the toilet, really. If you need to kind of visualize it in an easier way, but a way that I think troubles people, at least subliminally, it's the question, well, if we didn't make anything, if we were all about information, would we still be able to eat? And of course, the answer to that is no, we wouldn't. We need the substance of the real economy, farmers and tinkers and tailors, to do their thing. And So most of us, especially people with jobs that are, let's say, information related, they would find themselves jobless. And of course, the irony is they're going to find themselves jobless anyway, because anything having to do with information right now has been co-opted in the most ruthlessly efficient way by the AI infrastructure. So that's where I think we are. We're sinking zillions of dollars, bazillions, let's say, into AI, but nobody really knows, certainly not economists, how to put a value on information itself. And I say that when the stock market, this bull market will end, I can promise you that. And when it does end, and we have a bear market that essentially precipitates the biggest boom that we've ever experienced into the worst bust, well, we're going to be in a depression. And I think that the value of information at that point is going to seek out its real level, and people are going to realize that all the information is just bullshit. And for the most part, if you want to give it a value right now, the clearest value it has is that it's eliminating jobs in every area of the economy. So, and there's no getting around that. You know, sometimes the kahunas like Sam Altman get out there and say, no, we think it's really going to create more jobs than it's going to be a net gain for the economy. I think that's the biggest crock that has ever been headlined, really. So anyway, that's really what I've been thinking about as these huge numbers get tossed around with AI. What is the value of information? And right now it's doing really stupid things that we don't need. Like it's probably part of high speed trading infrastructure, and it's finding ruthlessly efficient ways to do this and that. But it's certainly squashing creativity out of the economy.
Well, anybody who's a graphic artist is going to be put out of work by AI. Perhaps the only job will be an AI data center maintenance person.
And you wouldn't really know which screws to tighten, you know. They'll give you a little tool set with some ratchet drivers and a bandsaw even. And where do you start, really, if you're in AI maintenance?
Well, you know, servers go down, stuff breaks, until they develop the robots to do that job as well.
Well, self-diagnostics for those servers is going to come a lot sooner than diagnosing whatever problem we're having with Windows 11. That much I can promise you. You know, they're going to put the money where it achieves the greatest efficiency, and nowhere in that scheme of things, when you're talking about efficiencies, does the word consumer appear? Consumer is really just I won't call it an appendage or a wart or a tab. It's just to keep the cash moving. That's the only function we serve.
Now, the so-called data they're going to serve up to us, people still want to know what's going on. The problem with journalism is all these regular outlets are closing down in Vancouver. The All Sports Station and the All News Station just closed down after their home company, Rogers, decided to buy up all the sports properties in Toronto, the Maple Leafs, the Blue Jays, and so on. So the money for that had to come from somewhere. Who's going to gather this information that AI is supposed to distribute?
Well, AI can gather it itself on the Internet. You know, you had fraudsters like Mark Zuckerberg, and he's probably not the only one, but they put a crawler out there on the web, and if it picks out, most often it'll be some inconsequential real estate sale in Ocean City, New Jersey. Let's say a beach home changed hands for $6 million, all right? So that becomes the lead story in a quote-unquote Ocean City newspaper. So, you know, I'm intimately, or let's say acutely aware of the loss of news gathering ability, because I used to be a newspaper reporter and I was the editor of a medium-sized paper in New Jersey for a few years. And, you know, you could see the news gathering organizations put a lot of money into it, and a company, a paper like the Wall Street Journal, could spring a reporter. They wanted to develop a, let's say, a really good investigative piece. They might free their best reporter for 3 or 4 months to do that story. But these days, forget it. You know, there are no reporters. They're just a few lucky people get jobs, but the news gathering is at a minimum, and the biggest loss there has been local governance, because the newspapers used to sort of be the voice of the people, and the people were its constituency, and or they were organized as constituents. But with that out of the way, there's nobody really to intercept the developers. So the developers come into every little town, and they build an expensive subdivision, and you don't have an area of this country, even in the worst boondocks of some of the Gulf states, Louisiana, Mississippi, you can't find a place that's so boondocky that they don't have a subdevelopment of $800,000 homes. So the developers come in, and there's nobody to oppose them or discipline them or even to extract some value from them. They just build the developments. And usually people run for local office, or they're all real estate people. They want to not only know which property to buy ahead of the fact, but they want to influence the development of properties that are adjacent to or owned by them. So at a local level, the developers have run roughshod, and I think that's probably the most significant negative that's occurred with the downfall of brick and mortar newspapers. Or I say brick and mortar, but even at the digital level, nothing's much being covered anymore.
When you don't have reporters who are responsible to an editor or an organization, do you get accurate news? If you just have individuals putting things online?
Well, you need good managing editors to kind of whip the reporters into line and give them a sense of priorities. Unfortunately, we haven't had any of them in a while. There are no old school managing editors. Most of them come out of commie hothouses like, Northwestern or Columbia J School. And all the best journalism schools right now they've been turning out lefties who are out to say, make the world safe for democracy, since Woodward Bernstein. And I had a front row seat for that as well. I started as a reporter in 1971. And, if you compare the Watergate scandal to pretty much everyday stuff that the New York Times doesn't even bother to report anymore, the Watergate scandal it doesn't even get on the radar. It wasn't even a PTA bake sale compared to what goes on routinely now and is completely ignored. So, yes, Woodward and Bernstein inspired every J school student to think, I'm going to change this world. I'm going to make it safe for democracy. And they've got a very warped idea of their role and of the balances in the civic process itself. You know, they couldn't really care about covering a planning board meeting or a zoning board or something like that. They're all out even the agenda sort of tilts one way to sort of color the Republicans as the bad guys and the Democrats as the good guys. So look what you've got there as an outgrowth of that.
Will people get back all the money they've invested in AI?
No, but the nice thing is that the people who invested tens of billions of dollars are going to get absolutely buried. It's interesting. You can't quite say that the data center fad is still born, but it's certainly meeting with enough local resistance to put a serious kibosh on it. You won't see that reported much. Well, no, I won't say that. Even the Wall Street Journal, a blind squirrel will find that acorn now and then. And I can't remember whether it was a journal or maybe Bloomberg of all places, but they are reporting on some of the tactics that the data center guys are using. You know, like Texas is very open to data centers, and what happens is the data guys will come to some pristine prairie neighborhood, and they get permits for a couple of turbines, and before you know it, you know, they start with they sort of get the permitting done one turbine at a time, and by the time it's too late to stop it, the neighborhood realizes that they're going to have 80 turbines sitting out there in their backyard that they can't do anything about. So I don't know. Could you say that the upside is that we'll have a massive overcapacity in energy? Because the fantasies, and the dreams about everybody using AI, I asked the question, for what? What are we going to pay for? What piece of it will we pay for? But this idea of everybody using AI, it creates, at least in theory, the need for infinite power. And of course, we've got Elon Musk going to another planet to generate that power. And we've got all sorts of ingenious solutions. But I think we should sort of come back to basics and say, well, what is all this information worth?
We'll have more with Rick Ackerman right after this.
Don't miss out. Stay informed. Receive the HowStreet.com weekly recap with thought-provoking podcasts, radio, and articles delivered to your inbox. Sign up for the HowStreet.com weekly recap on our homepage at HowStreet.com.
Welcome back. We're speaking with Rick Ackerman. Rick, the war with Iran appears to be back to full-on status. Is there any way to make money on this?
All right. Well, I would say you start making and selling drones. I mean, that's good business. So war has always been good business, and this war is now promising to stretch on to into infinity, really. When you say the war is back full on, it is not, and it won't be. It never will be. Mm. We had that chance earlier. We had the chance when Trump was all fired up, and I think he saw things Israel's way, which is that you've got to wipe these vermin out in order to win a war. But I think it kind of dawned on everybody a few months ago that what we're talking about, what Trump's, I think he doesn't talk quite as I hate to use the word hubristically, but he doesn't talk about the jihadis getting down on their knees and surrendering or running up a white flag. That's not in anybody's vision anymore. And I guess we're in a war of attrition, and when you consider who the enemy is, it's going to make the Viet Cong look like a bunch of patsies.
Well, in the Iran-Iraq war, the Iranians would go to schools and recruit 12-year-olds who said, you want to be a martyr for your country? Just put them in uniform, not even give them guns, and charge them towards the Iraqis to burn out their guns. And then when they were out of ammunition, they would send in the real armed troops. So that's the kind of mentality that you're dealing with.
Well, we keep, you know, at the news and policy level, we're talking about how we've wiped out the leadership, the command structure in Iran that we could negotiate a deal with. So now we're dealing with the Revolutionary Guard or whoever the religious leaders are, but there's nobody to talk business with. And what amazes me is that the stock market, which is so, it's really oblivious to reality. It's just one giant heap of unconnected nerve endings that's not connected to a brain, really, but it just keeps chugging along. And I think the attitude was, come on, let's get this Iran Hormuz thing out of the way so we can do what we do best, which is throw other people's money at sick stocks. And actually, they're rotating now. They sort of, go back and forth between we're buying the semiconductors today and selling a deep think. And we're in sort of a hardware software dither here. But the market's instincts have been, to, you know, let's get on with it. Let's not have to concern ourselves with the real world. But now we're in a quagmire, and that's certainly going to be a growing concern.
Crude, is it going to, I mean, I was surprised that when I looked at the stock markets this morning, crude prices were actually down.
Don't believe it. Yeah, they were earlier today, but they're not as we speak. Hmm. And I did put out a note to my subscribers today that any time you see a blip down in crude, don't believe it. It's simply consolidating for the next leap, which in the case of a NYMEX August futures contract, my next target's up around 86 or 87, somewhere in between. And that's basic versus a current, I think it's 80, 81 or so right now. Let me call up my screen and get you the exact August COMEX. It's $79.62. It's just about unchanged on a day. But, you know, don't think that oil prices are going to come down any more than that prices at the pump are going to stay below or going to come down to $3. It's just not happening.
Gold, is it going to go anywhere?
Gold is garbage mode right now. It doesn't matter. It's being hit by so many things, including a strong dollar, higher interest rates, liquidations by sovereign holders of gold who have higher fuel bills to pay. I keep using India as the example, but gold is being treated like garbage at the moment, and I don't see that. Well, I say I don't see the trend abating, but I do have targets for the, it'd be the September, September COMEX contract and the August gold contract. And those targets are at respectively, silver was trading earlier today at 57, oh, it's at 50, it's come down a buck and a half. It's trading $56.22. I think it's going to fall at least to 52.47, that's basis September, before it can even try to turn around. August gold currently at 398.970, down 1.5% today, $61. I think it's going to come down to 3630 before it can attempt to find a bottom. So that's another 360 points of slippage for gold.
Are they going to legalize cannabis federally in the U.S.?
No. We just had, you know, and I think I mentioned this earlier, but if we go back to 1961, Lenny Bruce, I remember Lenny Bruce saying, I was a big fan of Lenny Bruce. I pretty much had all his routines memorized, but I think it was in a biography he mentioned. He said that he was certain that marijuana would be legalized because all his lawyer friends smoked it and they would eventually become congressmen. All right, so fast forward 65 years, and we haven't really had much progress. The federal government has sort of, especially Trump is going to be the most favorable administration for all things marijuana, but if we haven't fully legalized it yet, then I don't think it'll happen. But in a de facto way, it's certainly getting easier to transport pot, to smoke it, and this and that. So I think that if you're just a marijuana smoker, that whatever changes occur at the legislative level are not going to have much of an impact on your life. You're already pretty safe.
Cryptocurrencies, are they on the way out?
They're garbage. I say gold is garbage in a way that's more disgusted with the sellers of gold, really, with the whole world not appreciating the value of gold. But of course, you wind up being an angry investor. You simply have to accept whatever stupidity the markets visits. on your favorite vehicle. But Bitcoin's another story. It is truly garbage because it came from nowhere. We've got some guy, let's say for the sake of argument, that his name actually was Satoshi. It's sort of a purloin letter thing where if anybody really wanted to track him down, they'd just check out all the Satoshis in the Tokyo phone book. So he just said, well, we're going to leave room to mint 21 million of these money tokens. And so far, the only argument anybody makes as to why Bitcoin should be worth anything is scarcity. And, you know, scarcity alone is not money. But certainly anything as volatile as Bitcoin is should never even have a role as money. I think stablecoin, which is a whole new concept, it's almost like, deposit certificates for gold or silver. We're never going to have that again, I don't think, even under Trump, but we certainly have things of real value that can give stablecoin a transactional value. But you and I have talked about what is the real value of Bitcoin, what is the intrinsic value, and I would concede that it does have some value because blockchain technology that gives Bitcoin its existence can securely store a transaction, more or less securely, until nano computing makes some strides and can crack any code. But for the time being, Bitcoin blockchain, of which Bitcoin is a salient element, can record transactions securely. And for that reason, I would say that Bitcoin actually does have a value, but I would put that value more down around $2 or $3 rather than a current $64,543. So I just think it's a tad overvalued here.
Rick, anything else we should be keeping a close eye on right now?
Yes, we covered some good ones today. I mean, the whole idea of information age really touches a nerve for me because, as I mentioned, I did work as a newspaper reporter and editor, and I got a pretty good picture of how journalism worked then, and I can see how it's not working now. But keep an eye. I've been saying this for 40 years, but I think the market is really close to a top. There's no reason for it to be up at these heights. A lot of the companies that would ordinarily be buying back so much of their own stock, which has been a force and artificial support for the market, they're now kind of blowing all their money on AI. So the stocks aren't getting quite as much support from buybacks, and it just feels like distribution. You know, when I if it's really, really hard to get short, then I think it's probably the time to be getting short. And, you know, we had a 100-point gratuitous swoon yesterday, and today we've had a 580 80-point whoopee cushion bounce. So the market is really bouncing around quite a bit. It's just kind of nutty. It's got no headline as a fixture. The chimpanzees who try to figure out where to rotate other people's money, they need a theme. They're too stupid to sort of think it through. They'll give you some sort of shucking and jiving about price earnings multiples and historical comparisons, but that has nothing to do with the bull market. The bull market is just a cyclical, it's a mass hysteria that goes on for a cyclical period, and this is, I guess, we're at the tail end of a pretty long cycle. But the market feels really toppy. It's very hard to get short here, and however and whenever it starts to fall, it's going to do so in a way that will have made it nearly impossible to get short at the top. So I think Warren Buffett has the right idea. You don't really try to squeeze the last 20% out of the bull market. You just kind of ease out well off, you get in well off the lows and you get out well off the highs. But I just hesitate to say that Buffett will regret going all in cash. But if he's all in cash, then I think it's really crazy to argue it the other way. You know, if Buffett doesn't like stocks, I don't like them either.
Rick, thank you so much for chatting with us.
Always a pleasure, Jim. I do appreciate the chance to connect with your audience, and I look forward to these fortnightly discussions.
My guest has been Rick Ackerman, editor of the newsletter Rick's Picks, his website rickackerman.com. If you have any questions for Rick or for any of our guests, you can send them to info@howstreet.com. We'll ask that question for you. Our YouTube channel is Talk Digital Network. Find us on X at How Street. We're also on Facebook. I'm Jim Goddard. Thank you for listening.
Comments made on HowStreet.com radio are an expression of opinion only and should not be construed in any matter whatsoever as recommendations to buy or sell any financial instrument at any time. Available online at TalkDigitalNetwork.com. HowStreet.com Radio is a production of HowStreet Media Incorporated.